Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, we didn't want to be here. We wanted to do Skype. Skype didn't cooperate. Chris bailed. I blame Jed because he's playing volleyball. For the second week in a row, welcome to the Casual Heroes WrestleCast, as presented to you by Blog Talk Radio. Please kill me. Pat, welcome to the show. And I'm pretty sure Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, it was very exciting to be here. You're very enthusiastic, sir.
I want to kill myself because, I'll be honest, I was having a fantastic run on The Binding of Isaac, and that has been completely undone by the fact that I have to give my computer's attention to Blog Talk Radio now. And I have a theory. I have a theory that the reason Skype was being so uncooperative is because Chris was hosting the call, and the weather here is less than agreeable. We've probably got like 60-mile-an-hour winds going pretty consistently right now as a cold front moves in. So I'm going to say that that's probably playing havoc with some ISPs and slowing things down just a little bit. Honestly, I don't know if wind and storms are even supposed to affect the internet, but I'm going to say they do, because as far as I'm concerned, the internet is powered by magic and anything can disrupt it.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions.
I will make up answers.
Okay. Are you currently under tornado watch as well? Because I know the Gulf Coast of Florida is.
We don't get tornado watches in West Virginia because we don't get tornadoes in West Virginia.
We got the warning in Jersey, even if we haven't gotten a tornado in Jersey.
Well, we typically don't get tornadoes in Florida either, but we do get a lot of tornado watches.
Let's see. Let's see when the last actual tornado in West Virginia is. It's tricky to look that up on Google because we actually have a town in West Virginia called Tornado. So if you look up tornado, if you look up tornado in West Virginia, it gets okay. Well, tornadoes in West Virginia. It looks like the last tornado that touched down in West Virginia was an F1 that touched down in 2012.
Okay. My dad could explain how the internet works. From what I remember, back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, when the internet was starting to get going, really the mid 90s, a lot of like cable and telephone companies were laying pipe. They were laying pipe under the ground. And that pipe, that underground pipe, is what carries the internet from coast to coast to coast.
Yeah, Mark, I'm literally falling asleep listening to this.
You said laying pipe underground, and I'm picturing bunkers full of orgies.
That was the idea. I don't know why Pat just immediately tuned out. I was trying to be funny, but in any case, So yeah, there's basically like piping underground that carries the internet, which shouldn't be affected by tornadoes. However, our ability to dial up into the internet using phone lines and whatnot, that might be. So those are my best guesses.
I'm going to stick with magic.
All right.
Did anybody watch Raw this week?
I did, most of it.
Somehow I'm echoing on Blog Talk Radio, which is fantastic, because I'm actually on my computer.
It'll fix itself. Just be a professional and work through it.
It's not going to fix itself. It's a disaster. One thing from Raw, I'm calling dibs on Shane McMahon because that's the only thing I saw. You guys pick something else. Go.
Brock Lesnar done murdered Dean Ambrose and then accepted his challenge, making it two matches I actually want to see at WrestleMania this year.
He stepped on his head, didn't he?
He definitely, like, walked over him. Like, he gave him an F5 and then proceeded to just walk over him. It's pretty funny. Brock Lesnar's a dick.
Well, yeah. If you have your Facebook pulled up, I'm going to send you a picture that is loaded. It's been uploaded to Imgur and posted on Squared Circle on Reddit. And it shows very clearly Brock Lesnar stepping on Dean Ambrose's head. Just sent that to the group chat if you want to take a gander there. And it shows, I think, a nice physical dominance here for Brock Lesnar. Clearly paints the picture of Dean Ambrose being completely overwhelmed. And it makes Brock look like a huge dick, which I think is probably the goal here.
As if the chest tattoo didn't do that for him already.
Well, that actually doesn't make him look like a dick. It just looks like a huge dick.
And this is why my goal in life is to make sure my son turns out looking exactly like Brock Lesnar.
So you're excited for this match at WrestleMania, even though we've only gotten a couple of weeks of build?
Dean Ambrose is a good wrestler. I'm in love with Brock Lesnar like no other man on the face of this earth. They should be the match itself should be very good. And I WrestleMania, I think, has been hurting for gimmick matches over the last couple of years. And this one, you know, they've got the Hell in a Cell with Shane and The Undertaker, which we'll talk about. And then this one's a last man standing match. I can't imagine it's going to be in any way terrible. So, yes, I'm very excited.
Pat, do you have any aspirations that Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose will be a fun match?
You know what? Believe it or not, I do. I mean, you know, normally I don't think things involving dead people are fun. But this is a case where I could see it being entertaining because they finally found a use for Ambrose, and that's to be a Mick Foley-type punching bag nut who this monster just can't seem to break no matter how much he hurts him. It's very reminiscent of Vader and Cactus Jack.
I think that's actually a really, really good comparison. I've seen those matches. Vader was very much an unstoppable monster that was brutalizing Foley, right? And Cactus just until he developed amnesia and wandered about Cleveland and thought he was a sailor. So, and then Ron Simmons won the title. So it was a good time
for everybody.
For everybody involved. Pat, what was your one thing from Raw?
My one thing from Raw would be the closing segment featuring Triple H brutalizing Roman Reigns and smearing his nose all over his face, because quite frankly, I know with the PG era, it's hard to do those types of things, but they need something like that every once in a while to really establish at least a character or an angle moving forward. And, you know, the Roman thing, it's been, you know, very hot in some areas, very cold in some areas. And with Triple H now in that power position of champion, there's a very iffy reaction as to when things are going to happen. And I think them going that route with Hunter, really doing a number on Roman and establishing, you know, a level of physical dominance and a threat and showing that he can still go and just really beating the hell out of Roman, gets people a little more interested and shows the potential for what could be a very vicious fight type of a match, which if they go through with that, I'm all for it. And I'm now much more interested in that than I would have been.
This is reminding me, unfortunately, of the WrestleMania in Orlando. That's not good. Because what I mean by that is, if I remember correctly, you had Edge versus The Undertaker, which was good, but unfortunately did not end the night. You
was
had,
that Triple H and Randy?
Yeah, so you know where I'm going with this. So, like, you have Randy Orton and Triple H, you have this blood feud, you know, and I wish Jed were here to talk, you know, lovingly about how Randy Orton molested Stephanie McMahon while she was unconscious.
I wish Jed were here, too.
That's because you're in love with him. It's a different issue there. But what I'm saying is you have these two guys breaking into each other's houses and trying to murder one another and, you know, and molesting their wives, and it ends with a match that had no... That had no heat on it at all. It was just, you know...
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't one of the things like you were going to be disqualified and you were going to be counted out? Like, they were very strict, like you had to follow the rules in this match?
Right. It was one of those things where whoever had the title at the time would lose it if you got a disqualification. And it was a shit way... That I don't remember if that ended WrestleMania or not. Now I don't remember if that was Edge and The Undertaker or
no. I think it was a three-way.
Or if that was Randy and it was Randy and Triple H. So I'll have to go and look. But
I think it was a three-way.
Fucking killed the momentum of that pay-per-view. It was terrible. And unfortunately, if they do that with Roman Reigns and Triple H after a Hell in the Cell, and if they do that as a Hell in the Cell and a Last Man Standing, and you know there's going to be a ladder match where, you know, you're going to have eight guys from the roster, from the mid-card roster, falling on top of one another.
And a likely appearance by The Rock.
And a battle royal, if you end it with just a match, people are going to leave. I'm telling you that right now. Roman Reigns versus Triple H, if it's just a match with no heat on it, people are just going to be like, well, we've seen everything there is to see. Let's go home.
Although, to be fair to Roman, last year, his main event with Brock was really turning into something good before they screwed it up and put the belt on a vanilla midget.
China has earned her place,
and she deserved to come down and cash in her Money in the Bank briefcase. And it was a groundbreaking moment, the first female WWE World Heavyweight Champion. China had a longstanding relationship with Triple H. It's not always been good, but to see her make good on her WrestleMania moment, cashing in and defeating Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, not completely devoid of its feel-good moment.
Is the joke here that Seth Rollins and China are the same person?
Yes.
It's a good one.
Well, they dress alike. They have
to pick up on it.
They dress alike. They have the same profile and roughly the same wrestling ability. So, yes.
Was.
Now I really wish Chad was here.
was Seth Rollins in a porn?
He did have a naked picture exposed on social media.
Okay, if I am to believe Wikipedia, the last match of the night was Triple H versus Randy Orton, and I do remember wanting to fucking kill myself. Okay, now I remember. I've got the year wrong that all this took place. This was actually WrestleMania in Texas.
And it followed Shawn and The Undertaker?
Yeah. This was the 25th anniversary. Shoot the Ground by AC/DC was the song. It took place at the Reliance Stadium in Houston, Texas. The last match of the night, right, was Triple H versus Randy Orton in If Triple H had gotten counted out or disqualified, Orton would have won the title. So, yeah, it was garbage. That followed John Cena versus Edge and Big Show and The Undertaker versus Shawn won.
That's like when you had Triple H versus Chris Jericho follow Hogan versus The Rock. Like,
oh, yeah, that's another good one. So that's another great example of the situation that, you know, they need to avoid with putting Roman Reigns versus Triple H last. Honestly, the last match of the night really should be Shane versus The Undertaker.
You know what? We'll get to that more, but if it actually winds up being Shane versus The Undertaker, and we'll put it that way.
Okay.
I suppose the possibility could also exist that John Cena's superhuman comeback could be the final match of the night as well.
Oh, God, I wish.
This is being set up, I do believe, to be Roman Reigns' triumphant entry into the main event scene proper after a couple of failed runs with the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. I think WrestleMania is when he joins the main event completely as a cemented part, never to return to the mid-card, a la John Cena. And since you mentioned it, Pat, we'll go ahead and jump right into it, because the only part of Raw that I saw this week was Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker, or the Shane McMahon debut where they announced that he would be taking on The Undertaker. And first of all, what an incredible pop. Personally, I don't care a great deal about Shane being back. I think he's a fun character to have around. I don't think it makes or breaks the product, but it's always fun whenever you're getting crowd reactions like that. So
100% agree with you.
Kudos to them for keeping a secret and pulling a surprise that actually mattered to the crowd off. And if you listen to Dave Meltzer and what he had to say, there was a lot of truth to the promo from Shane's side directed towards Vince and Stephanie. Not entirely malicious, but there were definitely some elements of reality in that promo, as he talked about, you know, he didn't feel like Stephanie necessarily deserved to be where she was. He does feel a little bit cheated that he's not the fourth McMahon generation to lead the company into the future. So I think that helped. Shane was always a good talker. Vince is a good talker. Stephanie is nails on a chalkboard, which is good for her role as a heel. But I thought the segment played off nicely. They gave us some stuff to wonder about as we move forward. What's in the lockbox? How does Shane prepare for The Undertaker? And Pat, you seem to have an idea that it's not actually going to be Shane versus The Undertaker.
It's a theory I'm playing with, because, you know, Shane is now, if I'm not mistaken, he's near 50, if not past 50 already. In
I think
terms
46.
Of age. Yeah. So he's very close to 50. You know, he's a very successful guy in his own right outside of this company. He has, you know, three children that he mentioned on Raw. He's got a wife. So I can't see him coming back and actually physically getting involved in Hell in a Cell, at least not to the levels he has in the past, where he's diving 70 feet off of scaffolding or being thrown through glass multiple times by Kurt Angle. I can't see that happening, and if that's not happening, I can't see what they're going to possibly do with him and a completely physically broken down Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell. So I can't help but think that there's going to be some type of proxy involved in this power struggle, and they may play a route where Shane had previously owned WCW, and maybe he brings out a Sting or a Goldberg or whoever to get involved as his proxy to represent him against Vince, what have you. I think it's realistic.
Well, let me put an idea out there for you, Pat, because I think this is something that you'll be able to get behind. You book this match essentially like you booked the original Hell in a Cell with Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, where slowly, methodically, menacingly, The Undertaker just sort of bludgeons Shane over and over. He breaks him down. You know, Shane tries to fight back, but obviously can't. Undertaker just beats him up. The lights go down. The music starts. And out comes Steve Blackman to Shane's rescue.
You had me when I thought instead of, you know, the Kane run in, you would get a Sting run in because you wouldn't have to be overly physically involved, and he could just whack Taker with a bat a few times, Scorpion death drop him, and Shane could pin him, and that leads to Taker Sting at SummerSlam.
Well, Blackman's
but
got
Steve
those
Blackman
little wooden
would be so
sticks.
Much better.
Yeah, he's got those little wooden sticks, and he twirls them, and he's got that one facial expression. I think it'd be great.
Did you guys ever hear about the house that Steve Blackman owned in Pennsylvania?
No, but I want to, so go ahead.
So D'Lo Brown tells a story about how Steve Blackman was just kind of a weird guy, and not in a bad way, but he was just weird about certain stuff. Like, whereas you and I walk into, like, a restaurant and see a fork on the table and think, oh, that's a good fork for, you know, my steak or whatever. Blackman thinks of 38 ways he can kill you with the forks. So he's a little bit different. And
right.
He used to own a house in somewhere in Pennsylvania when they would do a show. And, like, he owned this house that anybody could crash at instead of having to pay for a hotel. But he never cleaned it or did whatever or anything to it, so it was rat infested and roach infested, to the point where D'Lo emphasizes that even Mick Foley would not stay there, and Mick would do anything to save a dollar and not spend any money, but even he refused to stay at this free house 20 minutes from the arena because it was so filthy.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, that's just horrifying.
Oh, Steve Blackman has successfully derailed our podcast.
Damn you, Steve Blackman, and all your crazy sticks.
Those sticks are fantastic. I love those sticks.
So I like this idea of Sting coming out and cracking The Undertaker with a bat and costing him the match and giving it to Shane McMahon. Hopefully that's the direction that they actually go in. It would certainly make up for last year's fiasco with Sting versus, Triple H.
Can we just talk about the holes in logic in that match?
Before we do, I want to make a point about that because Jed, who's not with us tonight, as we said before, you know, was talking about Jed. How I know you do. It's because you're in love with him, but let's not talk about that right now. He talked about how, like, they're going through the rehearsals, and they say, oh, and then you're going to take the pin. And Scott Hall turns to Sting and says, you came back for this? if they were talking maybe long-term about, you know, about that the plan, you know, the plan going forward was that at the following WrestleMania, he would get his revenge, and that would lead to him versus The Undertaker at SummerSlam. Okay, I get it. And then this will be satisfying when it actually happens. I'll enjoy the hell out of that. You know, if he comes down and all that actually happens. Here's my thing. So, I just don't think Shane's gonna win this match. It's weird because like, I don't think Dean Ambrose is gonna win his match against Brock Lesnar. I don't think Shane's gonna win the match against The Undertaker. And Roman Reigns is probably going to win against Triple H. And it's like, okay, well, I like these matches. I'm going to hate the people that win them. So just sort of my take on things. As much as I love this story and I got very excited about the direction it was going to go in, I just don't have a lot of faith that they're going to pull the trigger and actually, you know, quote, in storyline, give Shane the company.
Here's the question. How far away is Seth Rollins from returning?
He's a pretty good ways.
Because he could have been a perfect. He could have been a perfect, you know, proxy guy for Shane, where the Authority would have forgotten him and left him behind, and now he's back to stick to the Authority.
That could work. I don't think that would necessarily be a bad plan. I just don't know that he's physically ready to come back yet.
I also don't think he has the charisma to be a babyface.
I think he can be just because of the fact that he's been gone for a while and people always pop when people return.
Yeah, but, I was just going to say that. I think he'll be whatever the crowd decides he's going to be. And considering how they booked him, I mean, yeah, he was kind of a jerk, but in terms of, like, yeah, he was, like, he was always, like, the plucky baby face, only he was a douchebag. They always
and has no charisma.
They always booked him as, you know, fighting against all odds. And he never had any advantages.
He had John Stewart.
He did have John Stewart.
Yes, yes, he did.
Somebody went way back into WWE history and pulled some stuff out that could affect potentially if WWE wanted to run with it, how they handle this match. And we all know that they're not going to pay this much attention to their own history and use it to their benefit for booking. But on June 27th, 1999, Shane and Vince won 50% of the shares from Stone Cold, which were acquired by Linda and Steph during their ladder match. Shane was the one who actually held the briefcase with the shares in it. On the August 2nd, 1999 episode of Raw, available on the WWE Network for $9.99, Shane McMahon disbands the corporate ministry, saying, "The entire corporate ministry is now free to do whatever they want to whomever they want, until I deem it necessary to bring everyone back together." At the time of the disbanding of the corporate ministry, Triple H was still a member. Obviously, since it is the corporate ministry, there's one other guy that was definitely a member of that. That would be the Undertaker.
It wasn't Steve Blackman.
No, it was not Steve Blackman. Actually, the corporate ministry, in addition to Shane, were Farouk, Bradshaw, Midian, Viscera, the Big Boss Man, Triple H, China, Paul Bearer, Rodney, and Pete Gass. I love the fact that the Mean Street
Posse were in the
corporate ministry. Who am I forgetting?
I'll give you a hint. He's not alive.
He said Viscera.
No, he's not alive.
Test.
Yes.
Test is dead.
Someone
check
Twitter
to
make
sure. According to Twitter.
And an autopsy.
But Viscera is dead too, isn't he?
Yeah. Viscera is dead. Paul Bearer is dead. The Boss Man's dead.
Pete Gass is not dead.
But should be.
Hey, no, he should not.
I don't know.
He works for
about
WB
Pete.
Mason.
Oh, good job,
Pete.
Who
asked recently if now that Shane is back, if we're going to get a return of the Mean Street Posse?
I've been praying for that so hard, and it's not impossible. Pete Gass works for WB Mason. Rodney has a landscaping company here in Glenridge in New Jersey. And I don't know what Joey Abs is up to.
We don't need Joey Abs.
Well, Joey Abs was the best of the bunch. Let's,
But he was the only one who actually that was a gimmick for, whereas Rodney and Pete Gass were schoolboy friends of Shane.
I was going to say, all we need was Rodney and Pete Gass.
Joey Abs, 6'4", 270 pounds, trained in Omega Championship Wrestling. Let's see.
Wrestled as Venom, right? That was his name?
Yep, wrestled as Venom. He had his run in WWF and retired after being released in 2001. So
that brings us on to WrestleMania that says we want the Mean Street Posse.
Yes. And this opens all sorts of potential issues because you've got the corporate ministry angle. You've got the aforementioned WCW angle where it could be Goldberg. It could be Sting. Because
I have another question.
Okay.
Should my wife and I dress up as the Mean Street Posse?
Yeah, sure.
Pat, your thoughts?
The Mean Street Posse debuted in 1999. That's 15 years ago. I can't believe that happened that long ago.
Yeah, actually 17 years ago.
Time is steadily moving on.
I feel like 15 years ago was Savage versus Steamboat.
No, sir.
That was 30.
Much longer.
That was 30.
So, my wife and I, khaki pants, sweater vest, what do you think?
Sure, I support it.
Okay. Should I go wake her up and tell her about this idea?
Yes. 100%. Okay. Pat, while Mark gets a divorce, we can talk a little bit of Fastlane. Nothing significant happened on a huge part of the show. AJ Styles and Chris Jericho had a fun match. Styles gets the win by submission with a calf cutter. Jericho is the first guy to kick out of the Styles Clash in WWE. A lot of people seem to be up in arms about Jericho kicking out of the Styles Clash. Is it really that big of a deal?
I'll put it this way. I think it did more harm than good. You know, I know people are talking about Jericho as somebody who's now constantly putting guys over and whatever, and that's fine. Up to a certain point, we're doing a job. We're Jericho doing a job to somebody doesn't mean anything, which I think it's gotten to, which is why I really wasn't a fan of them putting Jericho over AJ so fast. But it could be just them trying to humble him a little bit maybe on TV. And I think the kicking out of the Styles Clash is a part of it. I don't really recall Jericho kicking out of any other finishes in his career. So it doesn't really make AJ look very good, and it doesn't make the Styles Clash look like a definite ball game match ender. And maybe that's because they're trying to establish the calf crusher as his go-to hold. And that's fine, but I don't think it's an end-of-the-world scenario, but I don't think it does a lot of good the way having guys kick out to, like, the perfect plex multiple times didn't help Kurt Hennig.
I guess the way that I wasn't really surprised when Jericho kicked out of, just because we see so many guys kick out of so many finishers in WWE that at this point nothing really surprises me that there are no absolute finishes anymore. Although I really don't understand why it wouldn't have made more sense for AJ to put Jericho in the calf cutter. Jericho finally fights his way to the ropes only to be caught in the Styles Clash. They could have reversed the order of the finishes there. But finishers, they don't really mean anything at this point. And I wish more guys would take the attitude that Scott Hall had. And Scott Hall's attitude was, for those that maybe aren't aware of it, he wasn't going to use the razor's edge for a false finish. If he got you up and he did the razor's edge, that was the end of the match. You could kick out of all of his signature spots as many times as you wanted. But the finisher, the razor's edge, if he hit it, that's it. You're done. You're staying down for three. And I'm sure it probably happened once or twice, but off the top of my head, I don't remember anybody kicking out of the razor's edge.
No, I think a lot of people slid off his back and like reversed it or whatever, but I don't remember a whole lot of people kicking out of the razor's edge.
The only real time I remember anybody even really reversing it is I think Brett kicked off the top turnbuckle and rolled him up in a small package to beat him.
Oh, he loved that spot, didn't he? I mean, he does it with Steve Austin at Survivor Series in 1996. He does it with Scott Hall. He just loves
it. But give him credit because it's two different variations of it. Whereas one, Scott Hall has him up on his shoulders from behind, and Brett uses.
Are you under the impression I'm saying that's a bad thing? Because I'm not.
Well,
you just went into a hole. Where'd you go, Pat?
I was going to say, I'm used to us talking badly about Brett.
No. When I say, ooh, he loves that move, I'm just commenting on like how many times I've seen him use it, but I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not like, say, a certain white-haired performer with skinny calves that he wears knee pads over to hide, you know, climbs up to the top rope and every match and gets thrown off and, you know, looks cheesy and stupid.
Our audio is a nightmare.
Shut up! Be professional. Just work with it.
I don't want to work with Pat being down a well. If you change locations wherever you are, Pat, go back to where you were. If not, we'll count on the internet and its magic powers to fix
things.
There's
a lot of lightning here.
Well, don't get struck by it unless you think it would make for good radio. But aside from the Styles Clash being kicked out of, I thought this was a fine match, nice back and forth. We saw some new stuff, although I think maybe it's time for AJ to just go ahead and put the backflip DDT on mothballs, because nobody apparently knows how to take it in WWE. It's okay to just let that one go. I'm excited to see Styles eventually break out a spiral tap in WWE. I'm okay with him using the calf cutter. I'm okay with the Styles Clash being kicked out of occasionally. I thought the series between Jericho and Styles was fine, but hopefully it leads to Styles versus Owens at WrestleMania officially. I know it's been teased, hinted at, we've been pushed in that direction, but I think that that would be a fine addition to the card. In the main event, Roman Reigns defeated Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar to become the number one contender for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 32. Any thoughts on this match, fellas?
I thought Roman broke his neck.
On the German suplex while he had Ambrose up for the
Samoan
drop?
Up on his shoulders. Yeah, there was nowhere for his neck to go in that spot. And I was pretty scared for his life for a minute because Brock clearly has no issue throwing anybody anywhere. And when Brock just picked him up, I thought maybe he's going to let Dean, maybe he's going to try to toss Dean a little bit behind him. Nope, he hung on to him and his neck
damn near went snap.
Yeah, that was rough. He had, yeah, I mean, I don't want to repeat everything you just said, but he had, there was no give in that suplex. It was like, it was like if he had suplexed him directly in. It was kind of like when Kevin Nash threw Rey Mysterio into the fucking trailer. It was,
I thought
you
were
going to
say when, I thought you were going to say when he almost broke the Big Show's neck when he couldn't lift him all the way in a powerbomb and sandwiched the back of his neck into the mat.
That too. But it was just, it was one of those where he's just, there was no give. There was nowhere for his neck to move, and he just smashed it into, in, you know, in this case, into the mat. But yeah, it looked pretty bad.
I thought the match itself, it left a little to be desired just because it was so much of a replay of the last triple threat Brock was in. Hey, two guys gang up on Brock, and then we fight each other, and then Brock makes the big comeback where he runs in, does something incredible, only to get screwed out of the win at the very end anyway. I wish that they would have come up with a little bit more of original game plan for the match, but what actually happened I thought was serviceable, and I thought it was a nice touch for Dean to just completely lose his mind with a steel chair on both Brock and Roman.
One small problem with that. And I talked with you guys earlier today about the Steve Austin podcast with Wade Keller and some of the stuff they complained about. One of those things, and I completely agreed about this, was so you have Dean Ambrose. He runs in the ring. He murders Brock Lesnar with a chair. Brock Lesnar is pretty much out of the match. He proceeds to then murderize Roman Reigns with a chair as well. And no sooner than he hits him with a chair, Roman Reigns is back up and spears him. Like, not even, like, I could have accepted he pulled himself together, he hit the big spear, if he had, like, sold that he was in pain after, and there was at least a pause where, you know, maybe they're racing to get one more finish in, you know, and then Reigns finally wins the match. Okay, I could have accepted that. But for him to be beat with a chair, then get up, then still hit the spear and get a pin immediately after, I'm like, okay, so we're back to not selling, we're not selling anything anymore, right? We just, you know, I don't want to turn into Jim Cornette here where, you know, everything has to look real. You know, you have to convince the audience and all this other stuff.
Will you lay that fucker in if you can't swing that damn chair?
You know, I don't have to be convinced wrestling is real, especially when a guy's swinging a chair around. But you still, I think there are some elements of wrestling that have been lost. This is where I do somewhat agree with Jim Cornette. Some of the elements of wrestling have been lost, and that was an example of it. I felt like he got up too quick, he hit his move too quick, and Dean Ambrose, who was just fine a minute ago, swinging a chair around like a crazy person, suddenly dies to a spear. And I don't understand the whole spear thing with Roman Reigns, because he can hit you with a spear 72 times in a match. You can kick out all 72 times, but that 73rd one suddenly is going to get you. Because it's the end of the match.
I don't mind that as much.
Oh, it drives me crazy.
Well, I mean, I remember watching WCCW and Chris Adams, and Chris Adams is always known for being able to hit you with the super kick to end the match, but
He wouldn't hit you necessarily with one super kick in the match, and that was it. He would hit you with a couple super kicks through the course of a match, and then he would get you. I mean, it's almost like an accumulation thing where maybe it's not a knockout punch, but it'll break you down eventually if you get hit with it enough.
I feel like in a rush to end the match and give Roman Reigns his victory, you know, into WrestleMania, I feel like they gave us a shit ending to what was an okay match.
Well, I think you're overlooking something very important, Mark.
If Woody had gone to the police, this would have never have happened.
Well, but Dean Ambrose did swing the chair violently at Brock Lesnar, and he did swing the chair violently at Roman Reigns. Brock Lesnar incapacitated and sent out of the ring. Roman Reigns immediately rebounds to deliver a spear to end the match. Well, that's because Brock Lesnar wasn't wearing a bulletproof vest like Roman Reigns to absorb the impact of the chair.
Got him.
That's all it is. It's the ring gear. I've said for close to a year now that somebody as a heel should protest Roman Reigns being able to wear the vest in the ring, because even to casual fans, you can see that it is clearly padded. And the problem is, we've talked about, I can't remember if it was on here, if it was on Bunkhouse Stampede Radio, but the problem is Roman Reigns has Baron Corbin's stomach, and so they don't want to take the vest off of him. And
does he really have a bad stomach?
Well, when they signed him, he was 330 pounds, and so he had to lose a lot of weight. And typically, even guys that are in shape, because you can look at the guy's arms, you can look at his chest, and you can tell the dude's obviously in great shape. But when you lose 75, 80 pounds, no matter how much work you do on your stomach, you never quite get rid of all of that extra skin unless you have surgery, and then you've got a scar. But the fact that he's also Samoan and prone to having an ample midsection, I don't think the guy's fat at all. I would say it's probably just impossible genetically for him to be able to tone his stomach to the degree that they want. Because
time to put him in a singlet top.
Stop looking like a gay SWAT officer then. Jesus Christ, the Shield has been dead for like 3 years now. Get over it.
Yeah, time to put him in like a singlet top then with those, you know, combat pants.
Yeah, I mean honestly, I think Roman Reigns would look a lot better if he just wore white boots with white trunks. But if, you know, but if he's got Baron Corbin's stomach and he's going to look gross, then let's take the white trunks away and give him a white singlet with the white boots. But
yeah,
way,
do a Bret Hart type gimmick where you maybe have like a white top and black pants or something.
No, get rid of him. Jesus Christ. Start making him look like a champion wrestler and not, you
like
know,
Bret Hart.
And again, not a gay SWAT.
That's what I'm saying. Do a Bret Hart singlet type deal.
Give him the Bob Backlund high-waisted trunks that come up past his belly button.
I'm good with that as well. White boots, high-waisted trunks. I'm good with this. Start looking like a championship wrestler, you fag.
Yeah, wear the control top trunks like a self-respecting middle-aged woman would do. Go out there and wrestle.
I'm glad we're all on the same page with this.
But maybe one day the mystery of Roman Reigns' stomach will be revealed. Maybe it'll be at WrestleMania as Triple H dismantles his ring gear.
What if Triple H brings a gun to WrestleMania and shoots him?
and then gets in the ring. I'm sick of this, Vince. I'm sick of your whole family.
Like, and then we find out it's a false finish, and the best saved his life.
It was me, Vince. It was me all along. And I'm never giving up this title. So wouldn't it be funny if Triple H actually has like a meltdown in WrestleMania and won't give up the title? Like, they have to remind him, you're an executive now. This was just an angle, and he's like, no, I don't, but I don't want to give it up.
Honestly, am I the only one who thought like Triple H's sole goal in competing as a wrestler was to eclipse Ric Flair's 16 world titles at a certain point?
I don't think it was to eclipse necessarily. I think Triple H would be the guy that would aim to tie it just because of the respect that he has for Rick and how much he looks up to Rick. But
you mean like how he made
him
carry his bags for years and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think Triple H wants to be the guy that they say, you know, he's him and Rick. Triple H and Rick. Those are the two guys. Somebody actually posited, again, on Reddit, which I hate to steal a whole lot of material from Reddit, but I wasn't prepared to host tonight, so I'm going with what I've seen this week. That Triple H could very well retain the belt at WrestleMania and hold it until Seth Rollins turns.
That would be awesome. If he actually beats Roman Reigns 1-2-3 in the center of the ring in Dallas, Texas, I will cheer like a girl at a Beatles concert. I will be so happy. Oh my God! If they run the gamut and Dean Ambrose beats Brock Lesnar, Shane McMahon beats Undertaker, and then Triple H beats Roman Reigns, my wife's gonna have to carry me home.
Somebody just hit their phone with a hammer.
I dropped it, but we're good.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot of emotional investment in what happens one way or the other. I want a good match from AJ. I would like a couple of fun surprises. That's really all I'm looking for out of this year's WrestleMania. There's nothing in particular that I'm looking forward to exceptionally. So I want to see a John Cena comeback. That's about it, really. Well, because I like John Cena.
I wish John Cena and The Undertaker would retire and move to San Francisco together.
I wouldn't mind seeing John Cena come back and insert himself into the title match and win it.
I would want to see JBL get up from the announce table and becoming champion again.
John Cena and Nikki Bella eat at my brother-in-law's restaurant every weekend since he's been off. Did you know that?
Do they order copious amounts of wine?
No, but apparently he's very okay with, like, giving autographs to people, and they order the same thing every weekend.
Well, of course he's okay with giving autographs to people. He's John Cena, and he knows what it means for people to get shot down by John Cena. Like, as soon
as somebody comes up, he knows it will destroy their life.
Well, as soon as somebody comes up and says, hey, John, can I get an autograph? And he says, get the hell out of here, I'm eating. What's immediately going on Reddit, on all of the internet news sites? What's getting sent to CNN and Fox News and ESPN?
John Cena hates children.
Yeah, John Cena's a dick. And so he knows that it's the price of being famous. It's the same thing as when Hogan would go out in public in the 80s. If that's the role that he wanted to have, this is part of what goes along with it. And I'm sure Nikki hates it.
Yeah, that's why the Honky Tonk Man doesn't want to get mobbed when he goes out.
That's
to eat.
Right. That's right.
So, yeah,
he's cocky, he's bad.
No, that's the best story ever.
From what my brother-in-law tells me, they're very nice people, very down to earth. You know, John Cena doesn't ask for anything like special. They just he's like, that's the one weird thing about them is that they've been doing this for weeks now since he's been off TV, and he's not quite sure why they come to this particular restaurant, since it's a restaurant and a hotel. A very chic boutique hotel in South Tampa. But they've been doing this for weeks now, and they come in and they order the same thing every weekend, which annoys my brother-in-law a little bit, because he was like, why don't you try something new? Why don't you let me make you something special? And then
John Cena knows what he likes, and he knows what works.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, nope, this is what I want. Thank you, sir. But they seem to really like it a lot, so.
I can see John Cena being a creature of habit.
Well, you know, that's why the Honky Tonk Man goes into Wendy's and he says, yeah, I'm wrestling at the show tonight, but I don't want to get mobbed.
I've not been down to this particular restaurant once since this has been happening to see if I can find John Cena. No,
that's retarded, and you should go immediately.
Yeah,
nope,
for real.
Not going to happen. If I find out that Brock Lesnar keeps showing up to this particular restaurant at my brother-in-law's hotel, or brother-in-law's restaurant, and him and Paul Heyman, I'm gonna leave work to go down there and meet with them.
Why are you being that kid? You're like, yeah, I don't really care about Bret Michaels eating at the restaurant, but you know, if Ricky Rocket showed up, I would go. Everybody knows Ricky Rocket's the heart and soul of the band.
I'm being honest. I have no interest in speaking to a lot of celebrities, but I would be genuinely interested in having a Reuben with Paul Heyman and drinking coffee and talking the business with him. Any business.
Yeah, and if you know Brock at all, if you've read Death Clutch at all, Brock will summarily bite your face off if you bother him while he's eating.
Well, no, I don't want to talk to Brock while he's eating because I understand all that. I just want to be in his presence. I want to talk to Paul Heyman. I have nothing to say to Brock Lesnar except, you know, I bow before thee.
I guarantee you if you got into a conversation with Paul Heyman, by the time it was over, you would think he was the smartest man alive. And then 5 minutes later when the bill came and you were stuck with it and your wallet was missing, you'd be kicking yourself.
It would be worth it. Just sit under the learning tree.
Well, Mark, I've got bad news for you. It'll probably make you jealous and downhearted before we start our list this evening. White Dwayne met Paul Heyman at an airport, and he passed on hanging out with Paul Heyman to sit down and have lunch with Road Dogg.
No. See, Road Dogg's another person I have no interest in talking to.
I will say Road Dogg's actually a really nice guy, and he's fun to talk to because he's just a guy that wants to talk about college football. And at the time that I met him, which has been several years in the past, he wanted college football scores, and he wanted to know where he could get a dime bag in Nitro, West Virginia. So that's all Road Dogg really cared about, but he was really easy and fun to hang out with.
Yeah, in 1998, he just wanted to know where a good titty bar in Jersey was.
I talked to Eric Bischoff, too. If Eric Bischoff shows up at my brother-in-law's restaurant, I don't know if I'd run down there like it would be Paul Heyman. You know, maybe I'd wait till I got out of work. But
If Eric showed up there, I would demand a phone call from you. I would immediately buy a red-eye ticket to get down there. I would Uber my ass all the way down to the restaurant. I would promise Eric that I would buy stock in Buffalo Bill Cody beer, whatever it took.
To do what?
To meet him and converse with him.
Okay. Yeah, I would sit and talk to Eric. Paul Heyman's at the top of the list. Eric Bischoff's somewhere underneath Paul Heyman. And I don't want to talk
Fine.
To Brock
Lesnar. You would get your wallet stolen and stuck with the bill. I would, you know, get sold on all these ideas and be inflated and think my bill is only going to be this amount, and then it turns out it cost my life savings, and Eric, you know, justifies that.
Would you want to talk
and I'd
to
be
Vince
okay
McMahon.
With that.
Would you want to talk to Vince McMahon now or Vince McMahon mid-1995? Like, give it a choice. Like, you
No,
could,
not
you
95,
know.
Because Vince in mid-95 has a gun to his head thinking he's going to kill himself because his business
I
is
know.
Dying.
That's the game. You could either talk to Vince now when he's, you know, in his 70s and half crazy, or Vince when he's suicidal. Those are your choices.
Why would I ever want to talk to suicidal Vince? I want to talk to crazy Vince, who's got these great ideas and would tell me all about how he made John Cena and Nikki Bella hook up and he makes them do it on his desk while he cheers with his feet up saying, make her come, damn it.
Get it inside, damn it.
Let me show you how it's done. And then he pushes Nikki off and he starts banging John.
I'd be curious to get inside Vince's head. This is the
I wouldn't. I'd never come back from it.
I would be curious to get inside Vince's head mid-1995 when he's about to get competition in the way of WCW. Because it was like September of 95, right, when Nitro starts?
When Nitro launched, it's September 4th, 95.
Okay. So mid-1995, the Diesel run. Right, I want to get inside Vince's head and find out what's going on with him. You know, he's on the verge of having to go up against, headlong to the Monday Night Wars. Diesel's his champion, and the company's going bankrupt. And just find
Damn
out.
Damn it,
like,
we've got to reach the common man. How do we do that?
Here, pal?
We get a wrestling plumber. We get a garbage man. We get a dentist. Damn it, we get everyday people in the ring.
We have a clown. We have many, many clowns. My plan is Diesel versus King Viscera at King Mabel.
And Max Moon. Don't forget Max Moon.
Yes. I became a social worker because I wanted to learn how people think, and I would love to have learned what the hell Vince was thinking midnight.
Okay, you can. Okay, you've got your intellectual discussion. Get ripped off by or get killed by between Vince, Eric, and Paul Heyman.
This is kind of like Barry Kill Fuck.
Yeah.
What are my choices now?
You can have an intellectual open discussion with no caveats. You can have one guy completely rip you off, whether it's Eric telling you your bill is going to be small and getting inflated, or Paul stealing your wallet and sticking you with the whole bill, and one of them kills you.
Well, okay. I guess I would fight Vince McMahon.
So Vince kills you.
Bischoff rips me off, and I have an intellectual conversation with Paul.
Fair enough. I'm going to give you guys choice on the two lists that we have here this evening.
I was going to say we could throw Jesse Ventura in the mix, too.
Oh, Jesse's a body.
I could not take 5 minutes of Jesse Ventura. No, Jesse Ventura needs to go do Gavin's conspiracy show, and I still won't listen.
They wouldn't let me in, and I'm a U.S. governor.
God, I couldn't take 5 minutes of that. Ugh.
So would you guys rather go through the 10 best Shane McMahon matches of all time?
No.
Or the 15 most surprising WWE veterans?
Yeah, go with the veterans. I don't even think Shane's had 10 matches.
I don't know what that means. What do you mean?
Well,
surprising veterans.
People that have been around a surprisingly long time in WWE. And I'll give you a name, and you guys, to spice it up a little bit, I'll let you guys take a guess at how long they have been with the company.
Okay.
And then we can discuss their time in the company.
Do we have game show music?
No.
Where were you?
Do I get to be Sean Connery from Celebrity Jeopardy?
If you want.
If you want. That's what your mother said last night, Napier.
The one thing that I will tell you before we start running through the list is that developmental time does count as time in the company. This is not just main roster time. This is time in the company.
You think you're so smart with your greasy hair and your Dago mustache.
People have been in this country like 100 years, so you can count the developmental.
So number 15 on the list, and I will let Pat open the bidding, Alicia Fox.
Alicia Fox. I am going to say that she has been in developmental since 2004.
Mark, what is your guess?
I believe she started spilling orange soda on herself. I feel like she was a Diva Search gal. They were doing Diva Searches in the early 2000s. Just to be different from Pat, I'm going to go with 2003.
Alicia Fox signed her WWE deal in 2006, making her a 10-year veteran of the company. She spent 2 years...
Is it like the Price is Right, where he gets closer to the actual answer than he gets the blunder?
Yes. And I will keep track, and we'll declare a winner at the end of the show to receive absolutely no prizes whatsoever.
To be fair to Mark, he pointed out the only moment where she really started mattering.
The orange soda?
Yes.
Yeah. She signed her deal in 2006. She spent 2 years in developmental. She debuted in 2008, quickly vanished into obscurity, and despite her shortcomings, is currently enjoying a slight push on the back of her appearances on Total Divas on E. So there you go. 10 years of Alicia Fox.
And one good moment.
Number 14, Fandango.
Ooh. Now that's Johnny Rocket, right? Or
Johnny Curtis.
Johnny Curtis. And since Pat got to open the bidding on the last one, Mark, I'll let you take the first crack at this.
Okay, so Johnny Rockets, right? Fandango's been around on the main roster a couple of years now. He had to have been in developmental probably 2 or 3 years before that. Gosh, I don't want to cheat and go on Wikipedia. Okay, hang on. They were Fandangoing the night after WrestleMania, I think, 3, WrestleMania 29, if I remember correctly. WrestleMania 29 was 3 years ago, 2016, 2010.
So you're going to say 6 years?
Yeah.
All right. Pat, what's your guess?
I am going to go 2008.
Johnny Curtis signed with WWE also in 2006. He spent some time in FCW, got called up to the NXT show, few SmackDown appearances in 2010 and 11, actually won that year's season of NXT, back to developmental before being brought up full-time in 2013, and then disappearing once again. Is there any hope that Johnny Curtis is ever relevant in WWE again?
No, sir.
No, only if he gets to really take back the let's get creepy character that he had on NXT.
Boy, I hope
maybe
he does.
EC3 comes back.
Boy, EC3 and Johnny Curtis together would be fantastic.
I mean, they had a great run together in NXT on opposite sides.
Yeah, Derek Bateman, very underappreciated in NXT.
Probably the Andy Samberg hair.
Yeah, probably. Moving on to the third item on the list, Hornswoggle. Pat, it's your turn. You lead off the bidding.
Jeez. I'll say 2005.
All right, Mark.
Okay, so the first time you see him, he's with Fit Finlay. Fit Finlay came over after the Invasion. Invasion was 2003.
You guys should have picked up on the pattern here. Hornswoggle has been in WWE for 10 years. He actually debuted on the main roster, unlike everyone else on the list. Debuted on SmackDown in May 2006. 10 years consistently of main roster television and has been shoehorned into exceptionally significant roles, being the culmination of more than one major angle that WWE didn't know how to get themselves out of, such as Vince's son and the anonymous Raw GM.
When in doubt, go with midgets.
Yeah, when in doubt, midgets. I mean, there's worse things.
And Santa Dustin taught him how to talk, baby.
That's right, baby. Now, I will tell you, I'll go ahead and give you a forewarning here. The next item on the list, the next wrestler on the list, the answer is not 2006. So
I was going to get 2006.
Just to spare you all from jumping in on that bandwagon, Alex Riley.
A-Rai, the varsity villain.
And I do believe this is Mark's turn to go first.
Okay, well, he was on that second season of NXT. He was the Miz's protege, which means he had to have been in development at least a year or two prior to that. What year was that then? I don't remember what NXT. I don't remember that first season of NXT. Okay, where was I going to find? Of, like, backtrack through things. Let's go 2009.
All right, Pat, what's your guess on the longevity of Alex Riley?
I feel like you're lying, and the answer is 2006.
Oh, well, much like Jake Roberts, you should have trusted me. As Alex Riley has been a member of the WWE roster since 2007. He is a six-year veteran of the main roster, but actually signed with the company 3 years prior. Probably the highlight of his career has been being in the Miz's corner for the WrestleMania 27 main event, giving him a spot alongside John Cena and The Rock in a Mania show closer.
I like A-Rod. It was a shame he could never really get going.
Here's the problem with Alex Riley. And I said this from the time he popped up on television in 2010. He has the body of
a 25.
He made
John Cena angry, and it led to massive potatoes in several instances.
Even worse, he has the body of a 25-year-old and the head of a 55-year-old. His head does not fit his body in appearance, in age, nothing. It's very disconcerting to look at.
It does now.
Well, yeah, the body's caught up to the age of the head, but, you know. All right, Pat, you are leading us off once again for number 11 on the list, the mysterious by his absence on WWE programming, Damian Sandow.
This is a while because I remember him wrestling as Idol Stevens and being a teacher's pet. I'm going to say he's been there since 2003.
Okay, I'm going to say 2004, just to be close to Pat.
That's a hell of a strategy you got there, Mark. You went the wrong direction. Damian Sandow has been with WWE since 2002.
Suck it, Mark.
Sandow signed with Developmental when Developmental was still OVW, being ran by Nightmare Danny Davis. In 2006, he bumped up to the main roster on SmackDown, as Pat said, as Idol Stevens. Who was the tag team partner? The tag team partner was
Casey James.
Too. Okay, that's right.
The guy who looks like Bobby Eaton.
Yeah. And not a bad tag team, managed by Michelle McCool. They didn't set the world on fire, but 13 years is a long time to be with WWE. In 2012, he returned to the main roster as Damian Sandow. And after the whole Mizdow thing, Curse of the Miz strikes just as it did with Alex Riley, he has fallen back into obscurity. But he's a good hand. Recently took some time off to deal with some family issues that are unspecified. Hopefully all is well and we see Sandow back in the ring in the very near future. Now here's one that caught me off guard because it's not an in-ring performer. It's someone that we hear the voice of on a consistent basis. Mark, lead off the bidding on Byron Saxton.
I have no fucking clue. 2010.
Okay, Pat?
2009.
And Pat just deliberately undercut you like the guy bidding a dollar on Price is Right, Mark. Byron Saxton has been with the company since 2007. He's a guy that has 9 years of experience with the company. He was hired because of his background in broadcast journalism. He had some creative responsibilities. He worked in the production truck, and they put him in FCW as a broadcaster, then NXT. From 2009 to 2011, he actually wrestled, and then from 2012 onward, he's been at the commentary table. So, actually one of the more well-rounded members of WWE's employee list.
And now he's fighting to be listened to by Michael Cole and JBL.
No, he's fighting to decide which one bags on him more.
He's fighting to maintain his dignity as a man and a human being, but good luck with that. Well, next up on the list, Pat, it's the one-man band, West Virginia's own, Heath Slater.
Heath Slater. I want to say he came in right as they were transitioning into Florida, and he was doing the handsome Heath Miller thing. I'll say 2006.
Mark, would you like to take a guess?
Well, I'm going to keep the theme of undercutting the person who goes first, so I'm going to go with 2005.
You probably should have just agreed with him because the answer is 2006.
I'm a one-man band.
You are a one-man band, Pat.
signed his WWE contract in 2006, reporting to developmental in Florida, FCW. Then he was key to the big Nexus push on Raw, and he's remained a roster personality in the six years since. So from Nexus to the one-man band to the three-man band to the social outcast to the guy mouthing off to legends, what's your favorite Heath Slater character?
Ooh.
I like the one-man band.
I was a huge fan of three-man band, to be honest, because I think it took three guys who deserved a little bit better and gave them something at least.
As ridiculous as it made him look, I was a big fan of Heath having the opportunity to be in the ring with the legends. And I've never sat down and had a conversation with Heath. I know this secondhand from people that helped train him and people that do have contact with him, how much it meant to him to be in the ring with those guys and for them to say, hey, Heath, we trust you to get in here and bump with these guys. That was a really big deal for him.
Does he like a modern jobber? Does he like being a modern day jobber in the WWE?
He loves having a job and being on television.
I personally love the interaction with Sid.
Yeah. Yeah, and
he doesn't care that the roster is running a train on him, basically.
No.
He's been winning matches, thank you very much.
He understands what his role is. He knows he's never going to be Ricky Steamboat or Randy Savage or Hulk Hogan or Mr. Perfect. He knows what his job is. But you know, like I said, secondhand information, it's nothing that I've heard directly from him, but people that do speak to him have told me how much it legitimately meant. Like, he sees that as a huge honor that they trust him to go out there with these guys that are 55, 65, 70 years old and bump with them, kind of like they trusted Bubba Ray to do the powerbomb with Mae Young. That's a huge seal of approval for Heath Slater. And he goes out there and he does what he's told. He's a company guy. And you have to have those guys on the roster. And I can almost guarantee you that at the end of the day, when Heath Slater hangs up the tights and boots, he's going in the Hall of Fame because he's been a company guy for a decade.
Yeah, I don't even have a counter argument to that. You know, if that's what makes him happy, and it doesn't, obviously it doesn't make everybody happy, but if he's okay with that, then God bless him. He's living the American dream.
Good for you being the anti-CM Punk Heath Slater.
Well,
you leave CM Punk alone.
It's. I'm sure that when he started his wrestling career, he didn't say, I want to be the guy that goes on Raw and jobs to everybody. I'm sure that wasn't the original goal. But once you're there and you're in the position that he's in, you understand things could be a lot worse. He could be Fandango right now. He could be Damian Sandow right now. He could be Alex Riley right now.
Not for nothing, but he could be Daniel Bryan right now. Daniel Bryan had it all and then had it, had it torn away from him. I mean, when you think about it, that way, like, okay, so I'm never going to be world champion. I'm never going to have my WrestleMania moment where I get to hold two belts in the air after wrestling two matches.
Likely to snap and murder my family.
That I was going to go with, but I'm going to work for how many more years I want to work and be happy doing what I love, as opposed to the guy who had all that and now has to go home forcibly lest he kill his wife and his potential children.
And when his career is over, he will be Steve Lombardi. He will be Tony Garea. He will immediately transfer to a road agent role, have no doubt about it.
Or work in Florida and train the guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of options for him. He's never going to be without a job unless he colossally screws up in the next few years. But Heath is such a likable guy, from all reports backstage, that there's not a whole lot of danger of that. So, and good for Heath hanging around that long. Number 8 on the list, Diego.
Who?
One of the Los
Matadores.
I think
that's Primo, right?
Yes. And
right,
I believe Mark is up on this one.
Okay, so Diego, one of the guys from Los Matadores. Now, this isn't the midget, right?
No, this is not Masquerita Sagrada.
Okay. The midget has a name? Oh, it's just the ball.
Yes.
Okay. Diego. 2006.
Going with the 10-year mark. Pat, what's your guess on Diego?
2005.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Radulich is on the board.
There it is.
Diego has been with the company since 2007. He joined the main roster in 2008, teaming with his brother Carlito. Would have a singles run, and then Epico would join him on the main roster before they would become the Los Matadores in 2013. Holy cow, the Los Matadores have been around for 3 years.
Wait a sec, Diego is Primo?
I just said
yes.
That when he started it.
Oh, I don't know. You both talked at the same time, and it sounded like gobbledygook.
And then somebody's echoing because we didn't talk at the same time.
Yeah, wow, Diego is Primo. Okay. In fact, if you'd said Primo, I might have guessed differently.
Well, moving on to number 7 on the list, Pat, the big guy, Ryback.
The big guy, 2004.
What was the CM Punk thing they said about him? Like, oh, I'm dumb as fuck. That's right. I wish he'd run with that as a gimmick. Just come out with a few symptoms because I'm dumb as fuck.
I don't know if they could get that on USA, but it could be a fun gimmick.
I think he saw a lot of t-shirts if he just walked out with the t-shirts that says, I'm dumb as fuck, and, like, you know, injured people constantly. You know, kind of like Kamala, doesn't know the rules, doesn't quite know the rules to wrestling, trips getting in the ring, that sort of thing.
Does a vignette where he learns how to bowl.
Yeah, they can get over.
Is managed by Slick.
That was the best video ever. Which takes Kamala bowling.
Take Kamala bowling. Anyway, Pat said 2003?
2004.
2004? I'll go with 2003.
I got it right.
Yeah, Pat got it right. He was on the Tough Enough that aired on SmackDown, and he did not win, but he was immediately signed to a deal and was stuck in developmental for almost 7 years. He would re-debut on the main roster with the Nexus.
Skip Sheffield.
And in 2012, came back as The Ryback, later shortened to Ryback, and has done fairly well for himself. He's been really over at various points.
Despite being dumb as fuck.
Despite being a complete idiot. Despite essentially being sloth from the Goonies, still possesses the greatest high-flying move in the sport today, his second rope splash.
What a thing of beauty that is.
Is he legitimately dangerous in the ring, or is CM Punk just a big fat baby?
CM Punk is a big fat baby.
No, I'm asking, like, from based on your insider information.
No, but he's never hurt anybody, Ryback.
Yeah, Punk's the only guy that he's ever hurt.
Allegedly.
Because if you watched Fastlane and you saw the whole thing with the shell shock where Luke Harper grabbed his arm, that's not even entirely on Ryback, because Harper left his arm down during that. And even though he wasn't in the appropriate position, he should have still tucked that arm up against his ribs, because then as Ryback falls backwards, that arm doesn't automatically go down to brace it. And probably when you heard Luke Harper groan and grab his elbow, and everybody thought Ryback had just broken Luke Harper's arm in the middle of the ring as he immediately scampered away with the referee, he probably just got a mild hyperextension of the elbow, which left some lingering soreness but no real damage. But that wasn't on Ryback, despite what the internet wrestling community would have you believe.
So, have we heard if Luke Harper's actually injured or not?
Yeah, he was on Raw. He's fine.
Okay.
Said mild hyperextension, but no lingering damage would be my best guess.
That's good. I wouldn't want him to miss time from being a completely useless human.
And that's right. 100% correct on that. Mark, it's your turn to lead us off. Stardust / Cody Rhodes.
Oh, goodness. All right. He goes back to the Legacy era. We just talked about that being around the same time as WrestleMania 25. WrestleMania 25 was 7 years ago.
Pat?
I really want to be a prick and undercut Mark and say 2005. Only because I really believe it's right. But I'll say 2007 just to be nice.
Well, either way you would have gone, you would have been incorrect. Mark got it right on the nose at 2006.
I'm number one.
You should have gone with the Homer Simpson, I am so smart, SMRT. Cody's been with WWE for 10 years. He's still only 31 years old and apparently getting ready to wind down the Stardust gimmick to make a return as Cody. Is there still time? Is there still potential for Cody to be a main event player?
No. Yeah.
No.
He's going to be able to disassociate himself from that Stardust crap real easy. The same way.
He is 5 feet tall and has a homo's lisp. It's not happening.
Almost the same way when Dustin burned the Goldust gimmick and they really had a chance to establish him as somebody. And you could see they even toyed with doing it for 2 weeks. And then they were like, I don't think so. With Cody, I think they see more potential than they ever did in Dustin. So I think there's always a chance he can do that and really advance and be maybe not a main event player long term, but a guy they can put into a main event situation, and he's not somebody that's going to let them down.
They want to put the belt on like a 6'5" Samoan, for Christ's sake. How do you see that matchup happening? You know,
Cody's a veteran. Cody will go after his legs. Cody will...
Oh, please. Cody Rhodes is stuck in the mid-card forever until he retires.
Cody is, he is not 5 feet tall. He's 6'1". He looks bigger than that on television because he is lanky. And I'll tell you one thing that Cody has going for him that's even more important than his last name, more important than his charisma, more important than his speaking ability or lack thereof, is the fact that he is a handsome devil. And
that really is a good-looking man.
And that will... What's that?
He doesn't do it for me. I don't find him to be attractive.
He does it for a black girl, and he's a white guy. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you don't get that a whole lot. Cody is he's a handsome devil, and at 31 years old, he's just now starting to hit his prime after a decade in the business. I still think there's time for Cody to come out of this and really move up into the main event. And I think the crowd will get behind him. I think the crowd is ready to see Cody return instead of Stardust. I think the Stardust thing has sort of run its course. I understand why he did it as a tribute to his father and to carry on the whole family thing with Dustin. I don't have a problem with the Stardust gimmick. I think it probably could have been handled a little bit better from creative side. But all in all, I don't have any issues with it. I think Cody can and will end up being a big player once he ditches the Stardust gimmick. Pat, number five on the list, Zack Ryder.
Zack Ryder. You know what? There's been a pattern here. I am going to say 2006.
That's damn you. All right. Let's do Rattleless Man. Because I'm sure people listening to this podcast have really enjoyed me thinking out loud. All right, so he was part of Edge's Goon Squad when Edge was a big deal on SmackDown. And
the Matrix brother.
Yeah, and he was married to Vicky. When was that?
2008, I believe.
Thank you for helping me. 2005.
And what did you say, Pat?
2006.
This is interesting because Zack Ryder first wrestled for WWE in 2005 as a jobber on SmackDown.
Woo-hoo!
After a handful of appearances as a jobber, he was officially signed to a contract early in 2006.
I win, though.
No, I'm, going to give, I'm going to give you both credit for this because he did first appear as freelance talent in 2005, but was not originally not officially a part of WWE's roster until 2006.
I feel like we need a tiebreaker now. For all the points.
Yeah, is Curt Hawkins the tiebreaker?
How long has Curt Hawkins been fired? I tell you what, I will go to Zack Ryder's Wikipedia page. I will pull a bit of minutia out, and whoever can get closest to the answer there will be our winner. Let's see.
So a 40-year-old man goes through a tantrum on a podcast to get imaginary points awarded to him. I just want everyone to be aware of that.
Yes.
As the theme song says, we're in the middle of it.
Where are we?
In the middle of it.
In the middle of it.
That was a good song, actually.
Just a little bit. We'll see you wiggle it. Just a
no,
little
I was
bit.
I
true.
Was thinking the Edgehead song. We're in the middle of it.
I don't know, but it reminded me of Wiggle It. Remember Wiggle It, Pat?
I do. Not
all right. At the Great American Bash on July 20th, 2008, Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins won the WWE Tag Team Championships from John Morrison and The Miz in a fatal four-way match that also featured Jesse and Festus and Finlay and Hornswoggle after Hawkins pinned Jesse. What does Terry Gordy have to say about his son being pinned by Curt Hawkins?
Saw Amber and Miranda just the other day, Michael. Ray's doing fine.
I love it. How many days... did Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins' only WWE Tag Team Championship reign last?
Okay, they won it on SmackDown?
They won
no,
it at
the Great
American, Great Bash.
American Bash.
They lost it the following SmackDown.
So
that would be
saying,
a total of, what, 4 days? 3 days?
Well, it was taped on a Tuesday, but it was airing on Thursday or Friday, depending on what year this was.
We would give you credit for the taping date and the taping airing instead of when they actually filmed it. So we'll say that would have been Friday night SmackDown then. So we'll say 5 days. Pat,
okay.
What is your guess?
12 days.
You are both horribly wrong, underestimating the tag team coherence and ability of the Edgeheads, as they reigned for a dominant and astounding 68 days before dropping the belts in their first defense on SmackDown to Carlito and Primo.
Congratulations, Pat. You get all the points.
I earned it.
68 days, one defense, and they lost. Fantastic. Number four on the list, your American hero and mine, two-time former world heavyweight champion, Jack Swagger.
Another lefty motherfucker.
I don't know who's supposed to go first anymore.
I think Mark is supposed to go first.
Go first.
Okay, so he shows up on ECW. Fuck me to go this.
What a great phrase.
ECW was around 2007. I'm going to go 2005.
All right. Pat?
I'm
the All-American
stick with
American
faithful.
And the swagger-soaring Eagle has been with WWE since.
I'm going to stick with Old Faithful and say 2006.
You should have said 2006, Mark.
Aw.
He signed in 2006, was stationed in developmental for 2 years, and debuted in ECW in 2008, quickly becoming the champion of the brand. 2 years later, he was world heavyweight champion. A few years after that, he had a DUI, and now he is completely irrelevant because of Alberto Del Rio's ability to get over.
I'm not good at this game.
Well, you're trying hard, and you're thinking out loud, and you're filling up time. So, you know, I was expecting this cast to last 45 minutes to an hour. We're at an hour and a half and still have a few more to go, so I think that makes for a nice show.
Mark,
number three,
when in doubt, 2006.
Number three on the list. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, number three, not 2006. Dolph Ziggler.
See, you want to say not 2006, and I can't ever believe it based on the results of this list. Oh, good old Dolph. I'm going to say Nick Nemeth, 2004.
Okay, so he shows up in the Spirit Squad. The Spirit Squad is around 2006, 2007. And when they got shipped back, and they got unceremoniously defeated by VX and shipped back to OVW, hence the sticker they put on the box, OVW 2003.
Mark, it was a losing effort from the word go. Pat got it right on the money in 2004. Now,
God damn it.
Here's a little bit of trivia that I had actually forgotten. Everybody knows him as Dolph Ziggler. Everybody remembers the Spirit Squad. What was his other gimmick in WWE?
I feel like I'm going to kick myself for not knowing it.
Mark, any guesses as to Ziggler's other gimmick?
Well,
Evan Bourne.
His gimmick was being another human being.
From when he cut his hair and stopped dyeing it, Evan Bourne.
Wait a minute now. All right, so Dolph Ziggler immediately follows after the Spirit Squad. So I feel like it has to be something before the Spirit Squad.
I feel like this is something you either immediately know or you're like me and had no idea that it happened.
Was he Mr. Wrestling 2?
Close. Close.
Do I get points for bringing up that reference? Do I get anything at all?
I'll think about it.
Okay.
It is his other gimmick, aside from being a male cheerleader and being the show-off, he was Kerwin White's caddy.
Oh, my gosh. Holy crap, he was.
And the gimmick got squashed because of Eddie's sudden departure from this earth while brushing his teeth.
Yeah, the gimmick died with Eddie.
Yeah, but he was Kerwin White's caddy. Unbelievable. 2004.
No, 2005. He signed in 2004, but that debut was 2005.
Yeah. That was his first gimmick. That was pre-Spirit Squad.
Which was completely on the web-based Sunday Night Heat at the time.
Yeah. I remember a couple of vignettes. That was about as far as I got with the Kerwin White character.
I know exactly where I was when Eddie died and what I was doing and who I was around at the time. I just keep thinking that year was 2006. It must have been the end of 2005.
November.
Yeah. Okay. So it makes a little bit more sense now.
Well, this one's probably a little bit less surprising given his status in the company throughout the years. Number two, The Miz.
Oh, God.
I know it.
But Mark, it's my turn to start off.
Yeah, Mark has a chance to steal it.
Oh, goodness. So the Miz has been around at least since that one season of Tough Enough that aired on SmackDown, right?
At least.
I don't remember what year that was.
Mark, I'm going to help you out. It's 1978.
Thanks.
Wally McDaniel was U.S. champion.
He's been with the company for 38 years and counting.
It feels like it. Oh, I'm going to go with 2005.
The correct answer was 2004.
It was the 2004 season of Tough Enough. And do either of you remember who was supposed to win that season of Tough Enough?
They wanted The Miz to win that season of Tough Enough, but ultimately Daniel Pewter did.
Yep, and everybody sort of figured that that was going to be the end of The Miz and that Pewter was going to be a star after he somewhat ambushed Kurt Angle because he forgot that wrestling's not real. And the exact opposite happened. Daniel Pewter flamed out very, very quickly, and The Miz has main evented WrestleMania. Again, we've said it before. I'll say it again. He's the best natural heel on the roster, and I don't know why they haven't used him better. I've enjoyed seeing him in the ring with Jericho and AJ, and I hope he can parlay that into more frequent success. Number one
Daniel
on the
Pewter,
list.
Hang on. Daniel Pewter has an 8-0 MMA record, including some fights in Strikeforce.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Didn't he do some porn?
I hope so.
Doesn't necessarily say on his Wikipedia page. But I'm now realizing I'm confusing Daniel Pewter with a guy who played Colossus.
All right, then. Well, number one on the list, Rosa Mendez,
and it's my turn to guess, I believe.
Yes.
I will say 2007.
Well, Rosa Mendez, I'll just point out, this doesn't have any bearing on the actual answer here, but she is a 2010 Slammy Award winner. Do either of you remember what she won the 2010 Slammy Award for?
Nice.
2010 Slammy for... LOL moment of the year.
I wish I were making this up, but she was the 2010 Slammy Award winner for best use of exercise equipment. Mark, what's your guess?
Daniel Cudmore. That's what I'm thinking. He plays Colossus in Days of Future Past. And I believe X3 last name. He's also
what's that got to do with Rosa Mendez?
He's also in the upcoming Warcraft movie. I'm sorry, I got distracted. What are we talking about? Rosa Mendez. What's the question?
How long has she been on the roster?
Oh, we're still doing this?
Yeah, this is number one on the list.
I'm going to go with 2000.
And
you can
Pat
at least
said,
try. 2007.
Well, because Mark went with a ridiculous guess, it was 2006. Come on.
Aww.
See, you've been around, Old Faithful.
You've been around for this list. So by a score of 13-2, Pat wins this completely meaningless contest. And in doing so, Pat gets to start off the plugs for the week.
So there's this show also on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, Waves, occasionally. Usually it's on Gavin's Blog Talk, however. It's called Bunkhouse Stampede Radio, to which I am a regular contributor, and it airs Thursdays at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can usually catch me on that reminiscing about an underappreciated wrestler from the past. We've talked about Danny Spivey, Hercules Hernandez. I got to co-host a little bit beyond just remembering a wrestler this week, which was fun, and you can hear me on that. You can also hear me on the recent Long Road to Ruin and Tribute to Black History Month, along with Mark and Sean Comer on the Shaft trilogy, technically quadrilogy if you include the 2000 homage to it.
by John Singleton, which I don't, but we talked about anyway. I had a blast talking about that cool private dick who's a sex machine to all the chicks.
What a good pet. All right. He did mention, of course, the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, where you can find all my shows and everybody else's shows that appear there, like Jesse Stark, Drew Source Material, et cetera, et cetera. Got a new show on Fridays right now that's taking the place of Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, and it's the Every Joe podcast featuring the previously known as Freak Boy, Mr. John Brodigan, your Rated R Republican. Yeah, he's got a new show up this Friday, wrapping up the Nevada caucuses and the South Carolina primary, so go ahead and give that a listen. My shows, Pat mentioned Shaft. This week we're finishing up Black History Month by talking about the Beverly Hills Cop trilogy featuring Eddie Murphy. Next week we'll be reviewing on Metal Hammer of Doom, the new Anthrax album. Go ahead and into the archives and check out our shows on Avantasia Ghostlight and Megadeth Dystopia. We got on the movie section, we got a review for Deadpool. We got a review for Kung Fu Panda 3 and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. You can also check out my YouTube page at Mark Rattledge on YouTube and see all the content that I'm uploading there as well. Going on in the future, like I said, we got an Anthrax review coming up. We'll have a review of London Has Fallen. The following week, we'll review Zootopia. And the Mon His Show, I'm going to go ahead and plug his contribution to the Rattledge Broadcasting Network. The week of March 25th, we've got a lot of special stuff coming to celebrate the debut of Batman v. Superman Dawn of Justice. That Thursday, I'll be doing a show with Robert Winfrey called In Defense of Man of Steel. And because we are fair on the Rattledge Broadcasting Network, we're going to give you the other side on Friday, brought to you by Gavin Napier, called The Case Against Man of Steel. So go ahead and check that out the week of March 25th. That's all I got for now.
Well, this is the Casual Heroes WrestleCast. Go ahead, Pat.
Go ahead.
Kramer, take us out.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.